Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
That is the name of the band. That is the name of the guest on this week's episode of the Alt in Our Stars podcast. I'm your host, Chris Payne. Thomas and Lonnie from Cardinox are the guests on this show. They are a synth-pop band who just put out their debut album, Portrait, earlier this year on Warner Brothers Records. And they've been kind of leading a double life in the music industry over the years. Way back about 10 years ago, they were together in a band called Forgive Durden, who were signed to the label Fueled by Ramen, who's still a big label, big in the pop-punk scene back then. So Forgive Durden, actually, they put out this rock opera album back then, and a good friend of mine from growing up in Jersey actually did a stage adaptation, like a theatrical adaptation of this rock opera about 10 years ago. And, you know, I actually saw Cardinox live this summer doing their current stuff and had no idea these were the same people who did this thing with my friend back in the day. So I since realized that, had him on for the podcast, really just tied it all together. I think that's a good theme for this podcast. We talked about how a lot of people from that scene are still in the industry doing stuff more in a pop direction these days. Talked about rock, talked about pop music in 2016. There's really just, like I said, tying it all together. That's the theme for this episode. And if I want to say there's a theme for the Alt in Our Stars podcast altogether, really just interesting conversations, deep talks with people in the world of alternative music. I've been doing this podcast for almost 2 years now. Some recent guests I've had on, Zach Farrow from Paramore, the band Wild Beasts, writer Andy Greenwald talking about Blink-182, local natives, Pup. Go to iTunes, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. It drops almost every week on all different days, so subscribing is a great way to keep up with it. But yeah, that's basically all I have to say for now. Here it is, Cardinox, the Alt in Our Stars podcast. So Cardinox,
yeah,
in New York City, but
here we are.
Not on tour, so what are you guys doing here?
Not on tour.
That's a great question. We're hanging out with you.
Okay, that's a great answer to that question.
Yeah, we're hanging out. We're getting to go and do some press while we're here. And we used to live in New York. And so we also are seeing some dear friends and going upstate to Woodstock.
Oh.
Yeah, and we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we surprised one of our dear friends, actually. It's her birthday. Happy birthday, Lynn.
Dear friend.
Shout out. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're headed up to Woodstock for the weekend, and we came in a few days early to be in the city and do some press.
Do some work. Yeah, but we just finished tour, so we were just here not too long ago. Last time I saw you.
Yeah.
Yeah. When was that? That was, I guess, at the beginning.
July 6th.
Wow.
Boom.
Just I only know that because it was the second day of tour, which was the day after, which started the day after July 4th.
There we go.
So, yeah.
July 6th.
Yeah, so we just wrapped that tour. Was awesome with Phoebe Ryan and Secret Weapons and Frankie on some of the shows as well. Got to go all over the beautiful US of A and play music. It was pretty rad.
You guys have already lived all over, it seems like, because I didn't know New York, but you just mentioned that. And
yeah.
From Seattle in Los Angeles now.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we've bounced around. Thomas and I met in Seattle and started working together actually initially on a musical.
Yeah, I was going to get to that because, you know, I saw you guys last month, you know, I was getting into the album, and then recently reading up, I was like, you guys were Forgive Durden.
Yeah.
Like, I was really, really into the Fueled by Ramen.
Oh, really?
Scene, like,
that scene.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So, like, wow, yeah. All right. I didn't even know that last time.
Sweet. So do you know Razia Shadow or
yeah, a good a good friend of mine growing up did a stage adaptation of it.
Oh, really?
For in New Jersey.
Oh, I think I might have gone to that.
Yeah. We were talking about it last
Oh, really?
Night. You did. His
okay.
name's Greg Scalera.
Yeah. I totally remember him. Yeah. So he put on what was probably we released like the instrumental version of the album and encouraged regional theaters and high schools and colleges to put on the show if they wanted to, and Greg put on what was probably like the biggest, best version of those adaptations, and it was really, really well done actually, and it was a great cast, and I happened to be here. We were playing at that festival Bamboozle that mm-hmm. is in the Meadowlands, and so happened to be here, and so he invited me out to one of the performances, and it was awesome. It was really
so cool.
Yeah, and for those listening who might not be familiar, Razia's Shadow was the final album put out by Forgive Durden, kind of a rock opera.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly, a rock opera.
So yeah, we met after all that, I wanted to actually go the next step with it as well and adapt it into a full-on staged musical with a libretto and everything, and Lonnie's background is theater. And we had met briefly, and so we were sort of reintroduced, or I got put back in touch with you and this other director, Brandon Ivy, and the three of us kind of started to work on it in Seattle, and then it sort of got picked up by a theater here, the Public Theater, down in Lafayette, and we started working with them, we ended up moving out here, just because if you're trying to make a musical, you kind of got to be in New York. We came out here, worked on that for a little while, and ended up doing like a two-night cabaret kind of performance at Joe's Pub with all these Broadway performers and everything. And at that point, we were like super kind of burnt out on it a bit, or, you know, just like we were kind of beaten down by it a little bit, I guess.
Developing a musical is a never-ending process.
It's a grind.
It's a grind. We were a couple years in, but, you know, from, they say from like, idea to Broadway is 8 to 12 years. It can take a very long time, even if you're super well established and credited with other work. So we just needed a little bit of a breather.
Yeah, and so while we've been working on it, we were also just kind of messing around with like pop songs, and so after that Joe's Pub performance, we decided to kind of put the musical on hold and start a band called Cardinox. So yeah, Cardinox was started out here in New York, mm-hmm. and then we moved to LA about a year and a half ago, like right when we kind of basically when we recorded the album.
Let's drop in a song from Razia's Shadow so the listeners get a feel for it. One do you think would exemplify things?
Life is Looking Up probably is, that was like the single off the album.
Here it is. So what I'm picking up now is Cardinox and Razia's overlap for a little bit of time.
Yeah. Like Thomas mentioned, we were working day in and day out on the musical, and we just needed a little bit of a breather. And when we were in Seattle, before we'd moved to New York, Thomas produced other bands in a friend's studio. And so I would go into the studio occasionally, and we'd kind of, you know, mess around with songwriting, and we recorded
because
I had been
in music and bands and stuff like that, but the musical theater side was all new to me, so I was really excited about that. But Lonnie had been in theater her whole life, and so the music
side
was,
band,
yeah. So that was kind of like the
we
give
reinvigorated
and take of that.
each other's interests in these fields. Yeah, so there was an overlap, and Razia's Shadow is not dead. It certainly will live, and on Broadway. It just might be 2027.
Yeah.
I think we were saying 2015 for a while. Turns out that's past. So
2027.
So 2027 gives us a good
12
buffer.
Years. Yeah.
Yeah, we got time. We got time.
Do you think there'd be a Carrie Knox musical?
I don't know.
I gotta go with my gut here, and I'm gonna say no. No. But I think that we could develop another musical separately. I just wouldn't want it to be constrained or live within the bounds of kind of what we've created in terms of soundscape for Carrie Knox.
Yeah, to me, musicals are so kind of ridiculous in a good way.
Yeah,
you know, those people are singing about their feelings and about what's happening to them. That when you try and make a musical about a very real story or like about a very modern setting, to me it's harder for me almost to suspend my disbelief and like follow along. If it's a crazy world with all these weird rules and characters and things that is not of this world or not of this time, it's much easier for me as a viewer to just like get into it. So in that sense, I feel like we wouldn't make like the, you know, behind the scenes how Carrie Knox came to be the musical or something, just because it would be too reality-based, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm looking over your shoulder right now in the Billboard office where we are. There's
yeah.
a giant picture of
oh,
Green
yeah.
Day.
Yeah.
And there was...
American Idiot was
American
fucking
was
great.
Good.
I can swear, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
You can swear when it comes to American Idiot musical. It's what Billy Joe would want.
It is. It is. That it was fabulous. We saw it on Broadway. Did you see it as well?
No.
Oh.
I should have.
It was just a spectacular.
It was very well done.
In terms of visuals, it was, yeah, it was.
And I didn't even, like, love the album, you know, that came out before the musical. But
really?
Once I saw the musical, it, like, made more sense to me. Like, made the music, it elevated it a lot in my mind.
Like, the album was written with a story in mind.
Yeah, yeah. But to me, it was just, you know, Dookie was probably like the first record I ever bought, actually, either that or Offspring Smash. But it was, you know, when a band that you knew like way back then is like very big and mainstream, it's you often, you know, you're like, oh, I like their old stuff better. And so I kind of had that feeling about American Idiot. Mm-hmm. But the musical really brought it to life in a way that I wasn't able to see or hear, I guess. Yeah, it was really well done. Michael Mayer
directed,
right? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Super, yeah. Spring Awakening as well, which is, I was just thinking, that's real subjects, very, like, real life.
Did he do Next to Normal?
No, that was
a different guy.
Turns out this isn't a musical theater podcast, though, so we'll stop boring anyone who's listening.
Have you seen Hamilton?
Apologize.
No, I have not seen Hamilton.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I think a lot of people want to see it but haven't been able to see it, so
right.
I don't feel
yeah.
as guilty with
right.
that one.
Seems impossible to get tickets. Unless you're
yeah.
uber rich.
Well, I mean, now Lin-Manuel's not even in it anymore.
Right.
So, like, that era,
right.
you know. I mean, it's living on, but just the creator not in it anymore.
Yeah.
Changes it.
Yeah. So, Thomas, you're talking about your background. Seems like punk is what got you into
yep.
a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Lonnie, with you, was it show tunes?
Yeah. Show tunes. I grew up doing musical theater. Like, Thomas mentioned, that is what you know, I was doing from like the earliest of ages in summer camp and at school.
Did you go to a musical theater summer camp?
Oh my god, yeah.
So did I, actually.
Did you?
My parents were really trying to, like, I was new in town. It was the first summer we moved there. I hadn't started school yet, and I was in a production of Pocahontas.
Who were you?
I was
That's
a tree.
Tree number two.
I was in the tree ensemble.
That's something to be proud of.
I wore like a brown and green sweatsuit with
yeah.
leaves and branches on it.
Wait, that's so cool.
And then I never did any more shows. I don't know why.
You can't. It's hard to top the tree.
You
part.
Can't top the tree.
Went on top. Does the tree ensemble have a song?
Yeah, there was. I think like Grandma Willow could sing, and we sung background and. Some songs.
Some ooze, maybe.
I don't know the
yeah.
Pocahontas
nice
musical.
I don't know that musical either. How
yeah.
old were you?
Like six.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So young, very
yeah.
young. Yeah, I...
his last summer.
this is summer. Yeah, I grew up doing summer camps, all sorts of fun summer camps, and in school, and then I actually studied directing in college at the University of Washington, and... I loved it, but I was...
And your dad was a huge
audiophile junkie, buff. Like obsessed with like tube amplifiers. And
he even had a label for a
while. Yeah, I mean, very small, but right. Yeah, he instilled a love of music in me from a very early age. But I grew up probably listening more to like classic rock. I was never really in the punk, emo world. That was never my world. But it's interesting because it's like that world seems to have morphed into the pop world in terms of who played in those bands. As Thomas and I have like toured and gone to festivals, and you see people Thomas runs into every. I mean, it's like your whole blast from the past. That's just reinvented themselves into a new wave.
Yeah, like you were touring with Jack Antonoff, Bleachers.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing you maybe knew him back in the Steel Train days.
Yeah, yeah. So we toured with Steel Train, and actually our manager was Steel Train's bass player back then, so we're very connected to that.
Yeah, who I like ran into at the show.
And okay,
I
was like, yeah.
You look familiar. Right. That's right. I just saw you in Steel Train.
Yeah.
They just played.
Yeah, they played at Jack's festival, Shadow of the City.
Yeah.
Did you go?
Yeah.
Awesome.
How was their set?
How was it?
It was great.
We were so sad to be missing it.
Their parents all came out and played with them. It was adorable.
Oh. They used to do that even when we toured with them in Steel Train. Like Jack's dad would come out, and he would be on tour for like a week and would come out and play. They would do like a cover of, I can't remember what song now.
Like, I'm picturing like a Glory Days cover.
It was like I feel like it was
Bruce.
Yeah, maybe it was Bruce Springsteen, or it was like Get By With a Little Help From My Friends or something like that. Maybe.
That, yeah, I can picture that.
Anyways, he would come out and play guitar with them. Just to fully bring it together, like Daniel Silbert, who was the guitar player in Steel Train, like he's a photographer now. He took Cardi Knox's first
photos.
Like promo photos.
Yeah.
I'm in a fantasy football league with the drummer, John Schiffman. Who was also the drummer in Bleachers until recently.
Who else is in the fantasy league? Is this like a former scene people fantasy
league? It's like a lot of Seattle people. So the other drummer from Bleachers, Sean Hutchinson, is also in it. I actually don't know that many people because I was sort of brought in from John, and so it was like their group of people.
But I thought you had a music world team.
There's another music. I'm in a few leagues.
He has a problem.
I'm in too many leagues.
I am also in way too many leagues.
Yeah. How many is way too many for you?
I've done three, and that's a little exhausting.
Yeah, three's too much.
Let's drop in some Cardi Knox music.
All right.
Wild Child. Boom.
Check here it is.
Speaking of fantasy football, Wild Child. Makes no sense.
All about the transition scene.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the scene and how you've seen this progression of people who were involved in it, in the scene, into like a more pop direction. I mean, do you ever feel like you're doing something that a lot of other people are doing? Does that ever bug you?
In terms of the sound of music?
Like following a wave.
Mm. Right.
Is that ever... like frustrating how trends can kind of
come and go
or like force your hands and
totally. We've tried to be kind of as aware as we can of it, of that, like that we don't want to be too
on
trendy
trend.
And too like, but it's hard because you know we're making the music that we like
listening to
which is
and care about, like when we started writing music for Cardi Knox, it was a very easy and natural thing to create because that's the type of music that we both were listening to and that we were into. And so people have asked Thomas, like, was it really hard to move away from the Forgive Durden sound? But I think it's just natural that, you know, your tastes evolve and change. And certainly, you know, being on a major label, everything takes time. So when you write something, the world isn't going to hear it for a while. And so if you're just chasing whatever is hot at that moment, you're already way behind the wave. You gotta just try and create what the heart wants you to create.
Yeah, you just gotta you know, a really good song is going to work whenever it comes out. And if you're relying on, like, you know, production techniques that are really trendy, then it's not going to work. It's got to be about the song. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, it's, I'm curious to see, I guess, you know, in a few years, if we, looking back at where Cardi Knox, you know, this album and stuff, if it feels, if it feels like it was too trendy or trying to be too trendy or not. I think about that a little bit, but I don't think.
I hope not.
Yeah.
But only time will tell, I suppose. We'll be able to have that.
Yeah. How did Warner first find you guys?
Our manager works with and has worked with some A&Rs there, and brought a couple of songs actually to Kate Craig, who ended up signing this project, and she loved it and came into the studio the next day. We were kind of in a unique position in that we had been doing a handful of co-writing sessions with different writers and producers in Los Angeles, and we went in with John Shanks, who is a very amazing producer and songwriter, and we were just supposed to be doing a two-day writing session with him, and that turned into, you know, 2 weeks, turned into 2 months, turned into him committing to produce the album, and this was before we had a label.
But at the same time, like, when we kind of were getting going with him, we had been in talks with another label, that it seemed like things were going well, they were interested in everything, so, you know, I'm sure that's, I mean, John obviously really took to us and what we were doing, but, you know, obviously he wants to be working on music that's going to see
the light of day. Yeah.
And that things kind of, like, fell apart with that label and the discussions there. And so he was really instrumental in sort of lifting us up from the rejection of that and just being like, you know,
fuck that,
don't worry about it. Like, let's just go finish this album and it'll find the home. And so we were still sort of in the middle of finishing the album with him when Kate first came in and heard songs. And we went into Dan McCarroll, the president's office, and played them for him. And everybody was really into it. And one of the coolest things about it was they were just like, keep doing what you're doing. You know, like, we're going to kind of stand back here because we like, you know, where it's at. And so they were very sort of hands off in that sense and let us just continue what we were doing. But it was a huge confidence boost, obviously, to have a major label believe in, you know, in what we believed in and give us that sort of vindication that we were on the right track, even though we had just been rejected by a different label. So
it was like, sidebar to that was that you know, we had been in talks for quite a while, being courted, so to speak, and you know, when we found out that it was falling apart, the next day we were bummed, and we wrote Earthquake. Actually, that day Thomas came to me with essentially the chorus, which were all these lyrics that we had been kind of working on but couldn't find a place for them to come together, and they came together perfectly in the chorus of Earthquake, and he was like, "What do you think of this?" And we wrote the song that day, and that is the song that we brought into the office of Dan McCarroll, who freaked out over it. So it was this, I mean, you hear these stories of this kind of full circle. You never know where inspiration's going to strike or how, but yeah, that's how it came to be.
Yeah, you could say every time a door closes, another one opens.
You could say that.
Nicely done.
Very, very
nicely done, sir.
Well, when you were saying that was when you wrote Earthquake, as you were starting to say that, I was like, oh, she's going to say that was when we wrote that song.
Doors?
Yeah.
No.
A lot of the songs on the album, it wasn't planned, like, from the beginning that, like, let's make a song or let's make an album that has a bunch of songs about, you know, determination and overcoming odds and stuff, but because of what we were going through at the time we, you know, multiple songs on the record ended up being about that kind of, persevering through obstacles and
we only really kind of became aware of those themes actually in hindsight.
In interviews when we would have to talk.
When people were like, so did you plan this? We're like, oh, no, actually we didn't. But that's just where our story was.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you often find yourself just realizing things through interviews?
That was probably the largest revelation that we had for this album. Certainly sometimes you'll be asked questions that you've just never thought about, you know, maybe mm-hmm. how a lyric affects somebody or, something super specific. But in terms of there being like this overarching theme, it kept being told back to us. This is what people were taking away from it. And so we were able to kind of come to that realization.
Yeah, but also things like, you know, we get asked all the time, like, you know, who are our biggest inspirations for Cardi Knox and stuff. And when we started writing songs, we didn't like make a, you know, we weren't like, okay, who should we model this sound after? Who should we, you know, we just wrote songs. And so in interviews, we've had to be like, you know, who really did kind of have the biggest effect? Because it's more just artists that we've loved that have inspired us. But, whose fingerprints are on it, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. Yeah, you do sort of learn about it, or like you have to,
like, forced to articulate.
Yeah, exactly.
Your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, doing interviews and like interviewing artists, I'm always hoping that something I ask sort of unlocks something that wasn't thought of before.
That's the sign of a good interviewer.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me really happy if I'll ask a question and an artist goes like, "Oh, good question."
Yeah.
Then like I'll be like, "Oh, all right, all right."
I think that really requires listening on your part too, because sometimes people, you know, come in with the stock questions they have and you can't necessarily unlock new answers.
You said influences. What are some other ones that come up a lot?
Questions?
Yeah.
You know, just how we started writing together. So
Well,
Cardi
I kind of asked
born.
That.
Yeah, but you know, it's always good context.
What else gets
influences,
asked?
What our live show is like. People ask
We end up doing a lot of interviews when we're on tour, you know, in different cities and stuff. So a lot of it's about how the tour is going,
how we hope people walk away from a live performance.
Yeah.
The feeling they have. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, to tie it all together, now that Portrait's been out, toured behind it a little bit, how do you feel? What's next?
I feel good.
Ooh, good question.
There it is.
It's been really cool to tour on this album. This is our first album. And we actually started touring this year before it was out. So what was really fun was getting to see that transition of people not knowing any of the songs to knowing a few of the songs to being able to be familiar with the whole album, which I'd say was evidenced most on this last run that we just did, the Boys in Poison tour with Phoebe Ryan. It was really cool to have people singing along with songs that haven't, you know, had any sort of single love or video.
Yeah, because we opened our set on the tour with Wild Child, which obviously was a single, and so see people singing along, you're like, okay, maybe they just know the single, and then we would get to like the next song and the next song, which are like deeper album cuts, and they're still singing along, and you're like, whoa, they actually like,
all right,
they know
that's
the album,
cool.
Like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So that was a really cool feeling and thing to see. And yeah, so we just finished that tour. We ended up in Seattle, played the Capitol Hill Block Party, which was cool for us.
Being from Seattle.
Mm-hmm. And we're actually going to spend the next month about writing, just getting back and writing. We haven't written for a while. You know, we actually finished writing, even though Portrait came out in March. Is that when it came out?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we finished working on it like last year. So we haven't written for a while. And so we kind of have like some little ideas bubbling. So we're going to spend the month
in the studio.
Yeah, in the studio, just kind of writing and see
When we were just in Seattle, we spent a few days in the studio and we were asked to be featured on a track. And so we wrote on this, and it was really fun to just be back in the studio. And it's a totally different mindset for me. Some people are really good at writing while they're on the road. And I am in awe of that. I find it to be really hard just in terms of time and energetically and emotionally where your head's at. It's just a different, it's like two totally separate modes. So it'll be nice to have a little breather, and then we'll be back out this fall, I believe. So
yeah, we're working on that. But yeah, it'll be fun to write because I'm looking forward to it at least because there's no like pressure. It's just like we have some time where we're not touring, so let's just write some songs. But they're not, you know, it's not really for anything at this point. So it's just kind of
get it out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get it out. Yeah. So it sounds like it could be released. It could just become
just see.
Creative energy let out.
Yeah.
Totally. We'll see.
It could be.
Could be a Cardi Knox musical. We don't know. We don't know what'll happen.
What was the track that you featured on?
It's the this group called The Lost Kings who did a remix. They're like a DJ remixer duo.
Uh-huh.
There's not a good way to describe duos like that.
What should we call them? DJ duo?
DJ duo.
Are they also producers?
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you call producers just DJs, it makes them upset.
Yeah.
Right. But like that's their bread and butter is like
DJing.
Going DJing. But they
play their own
stuff.
But
it's like we're serious too.
Right. I don't know. They're awesome. They're the greatest guys. They played this like big EDM festival down in San Diego. And so we went down and so they did a remix of our song On My Way and we performed the song with them. And it was just
6,500 people. This sold out room.
Half naked.
It was half naked. we went on at 1:30 in the morning.
It was crazy.
Just past my bedtime. But everyone else was up. So
Anyway, they, so yeah, we wanted to like continue working with them or collaborate with them. And so they sent us a track. Just an instrumental that they had, and so we spent
a few days on that.
Yeah, we wrote on that, and we're really happy with it. Actually,
yeah.
We haven't sent it to them.
If they're, I guess this isn't live streaming. If you're listening, we're going to send you the track, guys.
Yeah, we just finished it like 2 days ago in Seattle, so we need to send it to them. We wanted to like
fix some levels,
finish it, but then like listen to it for a few days because then like you notice some things, so got to tweak one or two things, but then we'll send it to them and hopefully they'll like it and it'll get released in some way.
Yeah, so you got stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it is exciting.
Well, thanks so much for coming by.
Of course.
For sure.
It's really
thanks
fun.
Thanks for hanging.
Absolutely.
Thanks
had a
for
good
the
time
chat.
Potting.
Potting? Casting. I call it casting.
I call it potting.
I thought it was a really thick accent of partying. Potting.
Potting.
It's like weird.
You don't say that?
It's been a great pod.
Cool. I'm good. Yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
Cool.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, so that's the show. Hope you enjoyed my talk with Lonnie and Thomas from Cardi Knox. I was saying Cardi Knox before I had the podcast, and I might have even said that during the show, but it's like you emphasize the I. It's like Cardi Knox when you say it. So anyways, check out their album. It's called Portrait. It's really good. On Spotify or Apple Beats, whatever you use, buy it. Check it out. It's really good. And yeah, like I said at the top of the show, I've been doing the Alt and Our Stars for almost 2 years now, so dig into the archives. If you enjoyed this episode, I'm sure there's other artists I've had on the show recently, or maybe not so recently, who you'd be really into hearing. Recent episodes, I've had the writer Andy Greenwald talking about Blink-182 and their new album, have bands like Pup and Mitski, Local Natives, Zach Fowler from Paramore, all sorts of good stuff, so rate, subscribe to the podcast. Helps so much with everything we do here. So until next week, take care, guys. Peace out.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.